Welcome back to another episode of the Positive Persistence Podcast, where we bring you stories to inspire you and strategies to help you tap into your potential and become your best self. I am over the moon excited to have Joe Marcoux on the show with me today, and it is such an honor. Joe, he is a world-renowned business coach, speaker, and author, known as the Sales Sensei. Joe is a sales professional dedicated to transforming individuals and businesses. Joe empowers teams to create buying conversations and close deals with the stigma of sales pushiness. Creator of the SOS or Sales Objection System Dojo, a live and virtual training ground where individuals practice and earn their black belt in sales. Through the dojo, Joe and his team equip entrepreneurs with the skills to navigate any objection. And he is here to guide you on your own hero's journey. Now, Joe is the creator of Sales Masters, leading countless individuals and businesses to sales success. Joe, welcome to the show, and it is an honor having you here.
Ian, it's the honor's all mine, my friend. I really appreciate you inviting me and being able to share whatever I can to inspire people to understand that, yeah, there's a requirement of persistence to be able to get there, wherever the there is for them.
Absolutely. And I have had the pleasure of hearing Joe speak twice this year at two different occasions and being trained with he and his partner in the sales dojo. And it's been awesome. And one of the things, the biggest takeaways for me when I am, you're in front of me for getting trained, is the energy that you have, the energy that you're able to transfer to us in the audience with that smile. Yes.
Thank you.
it's infectious, you know, because learning doesn't have to be fun. And a lot of times it's not, but you make it so. And so, you know, that just really helps to ingest the invaluable content that you're putting out there and helping people learn how to do the SOS.
That's it.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. And you know what? It's funny. I get asked by people all the time. And I mean, it's not to say that I don't drink coffee. Of course I drink coffee. Coffee and I have a great relationship. That being said, I mean, I typically don't have my first cup of coffee for about 90 minutes until after I wake up. In fact, today I didn't have my first cup of coffee until 3 hours after I woke up. So energy comes from within. And there's one thing in sales, there's three words that I will occasionally ask people at the end of a long day of coaching. And it's like, what are these three words? And I put up highest energy wins, and people will respond, highest energy wins. They'll say it like that. And I'm like, okay, let's just try that one more time. And it's like, Oh yeah, highest energy wins, right? Because that's it. Energy begets energy. Like attracts like. Right. So if it's negative or if it's low energy, well, if that's what you want in your life, if you want some high energy, you have to be high energy. There is no path to, or there is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. Energy is the same thing. That. Yeah.
Yes. Love that. There is no path to happiness. Happiness is the way.
You bet.
Man. So for our viewers, if you're watching this and you're seeing me look down, it's because I am taking notes, and I highly suggest that you do the same, because Joe has got a million pearls of wisdom. So Joe, if we can, let's take a step back and let's just talk about what you just said. So I know that, you know, people, there's a lot of talk out there about, you know, how to start your day. What are the positive things you can do in the morning to kind of get your day off right? And, you know, by every measure, I mean, you are a super successful individual. So I know that our viewers and our listeners would love to hear, like what is your morning routine that leads up to that first cup of coffee 90 minutes later?
Yeah. Okay. So my morning routine actually begins the night before. My morning routine would start at 9:39 p.m. My reverse alarm goes off. And so
reverse alarm.
Yeah, I've got a reverse alarm with the intention of the alarm tells me, okay, time to wind down. So at around 10:30 is when I typically will hit the sack and, you know, lights are out and I get to sleep. What I also want to do, however, is I want to make sure that I grind the coffee for the next day before I go to bed, because the coffee grinder, I like to grind it fresh. It makes noise. So whether I'm at home or I'm here at the cabin, if I grind the coffee in the morning, I'm going to wake Shauna up. She doesn't get up when I do. I typically get up at 5:30 every day. And so if I prep the night before with, and I've got a brain dump typically done at 5 o'clock for my work day. I typically do a brain dump earlier than that. I my typical work day will be finished earlier. I like to finish at around 2 to 3 PM. Typically I'll then do what I do in the evening, different things. The 9:39 reverse alarm goes off. I will set my clothes out for the next day. If I'm having a workout or not, I will have ground the coffee and then all devices are turned off. I wake up in the morning, 5:30, and my typical routine before I get to work to do my NUI, non-urgent important work, I will typically, I just go right into the bathroom. I will do my shushes, which are, you know, shit, shave, shower, shampoo, right? I will, so, yes. And I shave first thing. I'll shave before I work out, which some people go, what? And I just do. Barack Obama recently said, I saw him on a thing with Jerry Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld thought he was nuts. And he's like, hey man, I'm the president. I can do what I want. So yeah, I thought, yeah, he's got a point. So I just like the feeling of being, doesn't mean that I won't ever grow a beard again. I get into the routine. As I brush my teeth and shave, I listen to a money mindset meditation by a good friend of mine, Gavin McHale. It's 10 minutes long. It's just under 10 minutes. And I do that. And then once I'm done, I do a cold shower after the shaving is done. And I feel at this point, there's a moment within the meditation where I'm done shaving and I just take in the moment for 30 seconds to just feel abundance in my life and gratitude. And then I gracefully and with gratitude go into cold shower. Or if I'm here at the lake, I will go for a quick swim. Now, right now, the water's actually quite pleasant. In the month of May, when I open up the cabin, because it's a three-season cabin, it's 48 degrees. It's cold.
And just so people know, this is in Canada.
It is in Canada. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I will be here until the 1st of October. Then I shut it down for the winter because the cabin is not a four-season cabin. I'm building a new place up the lake with the intention of being able to be here for four seasons throughout the year. So that's my morning routine. I go through this process. I get some movement going first thing in the morning as well. So I if it's not, go for the swim. I'll even do some basic squats. The other thing I'll do, by the way, is first thing before I even shave is I'll drink anywhere between 500 mils to a liter of water and I'll take a probiotic. I picked that up from Jim Quick. And just, again, good gut health, overall good health, right? And then I do a couple of readings through Al-Anon literature. I'm a member of Al-Anon. That's for people that have friends and family that have an interesting relationship with alcohol and their behavior around alcohol affects me. So I have no problem letting people know that I'm an Al-Anon, very proud Al-Anon member. So I read one day at a time in Al-Anon, Courage to Change. And then I read a card from T. Harv Eker's Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. And then a card from Wayne Dyer. And the Wayne Dyer card, I'm looking at it, they're inner peace cards. So I get that all of this done within 30 minutes. Then I'll sit down and it's 6 a.m. and I'm sitting at my desk and I'm GSD time, NUI, getting stuff done of my non-urgent important work. And I'll do that for about 90 minutes. So I have no interruptions from 6 till 7:30. And that's typically my morning. And then at that point, it's, you know, go up, meet up with Shauna. We'll sometimes do a morning meditation together, or we'll do breath work together. We kind of flip-flop each of those. That's a half hour. Now we're at 8 a.m. And then at 8 a.m., I will either have a meeting or start getting back into work, because my first meetings are either at 8 or at 9, depending on the day of the week. So that's my morning routine. And it's...
Wow.
It's... I mean, I know it, right? So it's like consistency breeds the consistency, right? Yeah.
Right. That is amazing. That is, sounds like a lot of stuff.
It's not
in a short amount of time.
Yeah, you can do a lot of work in very little time. And that from 6 to 7:30, I get more stuff done than most people do in a day. I guarantee it. Are you familiar with Craig Ballantyne? Craig Ballantyne, Ian?
Yes, I am. Actually, wrote his name down in my notes here, because that reverse alarm. And a couple of other things that you mentioned, the NUIs. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to ask if you have a relationship with Craig.
If there's one thing that I like to do, is I'll give credit where credit is due. And so This whole journey about getting to this outcome with persistence, right? This positive persistence that you speak of, you can't do it alone. I can't do, at least for me, I can't do it alone. And one of Wayne Dyerism is, I see myself as surrounded by the people and conditions that I want to produce. So I want to be happy. I surround myself with happy people. I want to be successful. I surround myself with successful people. I want to be a multimillionaire. I surround myself with other multimillionaires. And so I don't want to be the smartest guy in the room. I want to be the person that's learning from all these other smart people that also want to lift other people up. So it's that thing. So Craig, I met back in 2019, and his stoic approach and his very pragmatic approach, I fell in love with, and he's been my coach now for almost 5 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I saw a clip somewhere that he's using your services with his businesses, and he sings your praises and has seen some exponential growth because of the SOS Dojo. So it seems like you guys have got a really awesome relationship and partnership going on.
It's very cohesive. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. What you just described, most people don't have the time for that. They have not gotten to the point in their life where they have been able to, whether you want to call it buy back their time, or they have been able to achieve some time wealth, if you will. So I kind of want to back the bus up and talk about the Joe that didn't have the time, who was, no pun intended, an average Joe, who had to wake up at 5 a.m. and maybe he's catching the bus to get to work to start his job at 6, and he is in the grind, 5-6 days a week. And how does that person, we talk about mastering overcoming sales objections with the SOS Dojo. How did Joe start to master overcoming life's objections? If we could go back and kind of tell your story. Almost not necessarily from the beginning, but I know that we've already talked about, when you were at the age of 20, young age of 20, that you were opening up your first retail store and going into business. And, I would wager that you didn't have the time, wealth to do those things in the morning to get yourself right. So if you could, let's talk about like the Joe before now.
Yeah, the Joe before now, before I actually got into I was in such an ego place when I was younger. And if I was to look back, if I could go back in time or if I could tell my younger self today to do something that would have a massive impact, it would be get a coach. Mm-hmm. Had I got coaching at 20, I can't imagine where I'd be right now. So at 20, I had the gumption to, I'm going to open up my own exercise equipment retail store. I'd already been in the game for 3 years. I thought I knew it all. I got asked to buy into an existing retail store that I was working and managing for. And the reason that I didn't buy into it was because they weren't giving me all of the numbers. I needed to make a database decision. It's like, well, I don't know what rent is. I don't know what the ad budget is. I was the salesperson and managing the store. I wasn't mm-hmm. managing the business. And so now they wanted me to buy in. And I said, listen, if this is the case, I'm just going to take everything that I've got at the age of 20, go all in. Because at 20 years old, you can make mistakes as opposed to like now at 53. Not to say that I don't and I can't make mistakes. It's just easier to recover when you're 20 than to recover making some of the mistakes that you can make in your 50s, right?
Sure.
So I went for it and I couldn't do it alone. And I didn't have the discipline. I just had a load of piss and vinegar. I was just like, I'm going to do this and I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
And so, and it doesn't mean that I don't have that same type of gumption today. I'm more methodical in the approach. And of course I've got a little bit more experience and I've learned that it's not just my experience that I should count on. I got to count on, in fact, I can rely on other people's experiences and I can pay for proximity. Bedros Koulian, the first time that mm-hmm. I met Bedros, was at the same event that I met Craig. It was at the Empire Business Summit. And mm-hmm. Bedros is a close friend to one of my best friends, Victor Proudian, a couple of Armenian boys. So, you know, they're highly in alignment. And Bedros, super, super guy, gave me a piece of advice because I had a book I was ready to launch 5 years ago. And he said, wait, don't launch the book yet. He goes, right now, what you need to do is you need to pay to get close to people that could help you promote your book. Proximity is power. I've been waiting for 5 years. So I've still got this book ready to rock and roll, and it's in the editing process now. And mm-hmm. this is the beauty of it. Bedros's advice was one of patience. And what that's done is it's given me the opportunity to continue to growing, networking, and man, if I had to drop the ego, if I was 20 years old, again, right, go back at it. I mean, I was disciplined because, I mean, I forced myself to it. The store would open at 9. I'd show up at like 8:50 and open the store. Today, I would be doing some work beforehand, some non-urgent important work. I wasn't doing any of that. I was just going in and like, it was just while I'm there, go nuts. And then, you know, youngster at 20 through 25. I mean, I was doing some crazy stuff. I was making more money than I should have been. And I was drinking, like binge drinking on weekends and like just doing some silly stuff. And
yeah,
now, I mean, again, when you surround yourself in a master I'm in more than one mastermind, it's you surround yourself by people with the behavior that I want to take on. I'll use I statements. I surround myself with people where I see their level of success and I model those behaviors, right? And I remember I was 18 and I got the opportunity to see and meet and do some work with Jim Rohn. This is Tony Robbins' coach.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I mean, that was impactful. And then a couple of years later, it was Zig Ziglar. Then it was Brian Tracy. Then it was Bob Proctor. Like, these are all these guys that have been around. And before all of them, there was Napoleon Hill and Dale Carnegie or Carnegie, depending on mm-hmm. how you want to pronounce the last name. So this isn't, you know, this process of how you pointed it out. This is mindset work and heart set work, your conviction. This isn't new. The thing is now we have an abundance of this because we have the technology to be able to expand it so much faster and be able to connect to it. So this is a great time to be alive. So all that to be said, Ian, the problem that I had back then was I had an ego because suddenly within a very short period of time, the retail store was making money. I had learned how to sell and I had my heart in the right place to, in the sense that of what I was doing to help people live a better quality of life through the benefits of total health and exercise. It's still something that rings true for in terms of a reason for being. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have the discipline. And I was had to a certain level, I had a level of imposter syndrome and I can definitely say I was definitely hypocritical, because I wasn't necessarily, I'm not saying that you can't have the occasional alcoholic beverage. I have no problem with that. I will still say I enjoy wine, and I enjoy a good scotch. However,
sure,
to go to a level of what I was doing as a youngster, and I had to grow out of it. I wish I could have had a coach to help me grow out of it that much faster.
So what was it that helped you grow out of it? And a little foreshadowing, I don't mean to answer for you. I know that one of the things that you say is the secret sauce is accountability.
It is.
So yeah. Was there something that came along in your life that helped you connect to that secret sauce of accountability, yep, that kind of pulled you out and forward?
Yeah, there's different moments that we all have in our lives. One moment that there's moments that you have as positive defining moments. And then there was one that was in hindsight, I might look at it as back then in the moment when I'm deep, neck deep, or literally a nose deep in a load of manure. This is a defining moment. And in hindsight, it's like my perspective on this has changed so much. When it was happening, it was like so, so challenging. So what ended up happening was I ended up selling my retail stores, long and short of it. And I started working as a representative for a fitness company. And I was traveling a lot. I was enjoying the work. And in hindsight, again, I wasn't happy in my marriage at the time. I was married. I was a young guy. I got married at 24. And then my youngest daughter showed up when I was 25, or my eldest daughter showed up when I was 25. And then my youngest daughter showed up at 28. And in my early 30s, my then wife had an affair with my best friend, the godfather to my youngest daughter. Mm. And we were living in at the point, I'm like 30 years old. I'm living in my dream home on the river in my hometown. I'm making a lot of money. I had been the white knight where took her from the trailer park and got her into this great lifestyle. Again, thinking that money was just the answer, right?
Yeah.
It's not. And everything, when I say everything fell apart. I mean, I just started a new representative job as a sales rep, and then everything hit the fan, everything. And suddenly I'm like, I'm stabbed in the back by my wife and the godfather to my youngest daughter, my best friend. I had thoughts of, I had literally planned out my own death. Like, Ian, it was to this day, right? I think of it. And the crazy thing is, like, this is essentially 20 years ago. I'm 53 now. It happened when I was 32, 33 years of age, when everything just literally unfolded. And it forced me to really work on myself. So I wanted to do everything possible to save the marriage. It was too late. She had already detached emotionally. She wasn't even angry anymore. It was just detachment. It was gone. Like, it was game over. What it forced me to do was I needed to surround myself with help. I needed help. So instead of here I was in my 20s, high ego, I'll be blunt. I thought my shit didn't stink. I thought I knew it all. I was making lots of money. Wow, was I wrong. And the first thing I did was I put myself into, I went to go see a therapist immediately. Mm-hmm. And then she had suggested that I go to this Al-Anon family group, saved my life. And it was a group of men. And it was tremendous, absolutely tremendous what that, and again, it was work. It was not something that was like one meeting and all of a sudden, yay, I'm saved. That's like saying, yeah, you go to the gym once and you're fit. Like, it doesn't happen that way.
Right.
It was the surrounding myself by the people and the conditions I wanted to produce. I wanted serenity. I wanted peace. I wanted joy. I wanted love back in my life. I want the moment that everything fell apart in my relationship, I immediately became a better father. Like, I mean, and to this day, I have a fantastic relationship with my daughters. And now I'm a better friend. And I also choose my friends more wisely, because again, it was Jim Rohn who said, you show me your five closest friends, I'll show you where you're going to end up in your life. So of course, yeah, there's, as you grow, you want to be successful at anything. Look at people who have a great relationship. Hang out with those people. You want to be successful in terms of your business? Hang out with those people. Like, are they holistic in their approach? And it's easy to see people in this beautiful thing called social media where everything is, you know, I love you and cows go moo.
Sunshine and roses.
Yeah, it's yeah. Like, this is just, it's not real life. I still have ups and downs. The difference is now I have systems in place to be able to temper that, the downs. I can move the ups like I want. I can regulate the downs significantly better. And so, you know, like relationship wise, Shauna and I will meet every Sunday morning and we go over our temperature check on our relationship. You know, on a scale of one, she asks me and I ask her, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do we rate our relationship this past week? Am I speaking your love languages? On a scale of 1 to 10, where are we? Are nice. You getting the alone time that you need? You know, let there be space yeah. in your relationship, for the cypress cannot grow in the shadow of the oak. So right now, as I speak to you, Sean has actually gone home until Thursday so that she can have some alone time. She can work on her art projects. We're still working together because she's a client success manager. And yet she's alone time's important for people. And then we ask ourselves, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how's our sex life? She always says, you know, her number, if her number's a 7, mine's always a 4. And so I'm like, Shauna, we need better numbers, baby.
Right, right.
Yeah. And we have fun with it, right? And am I being the best friend to her? Because she's just an outstanding person. I'm so blessed and grateful to have her in my life. And so what happened back when 20 years ago, as crazy as this sounds, it's one of the best things that ever happened to me in the moment. Mm-hmm. Ian, oh my God, I was effing dying, man. I thought about suicide. Now I'm a better man, a better husband, a better father, a better friend I'm a better son. I'm a better brother. And that doesn't mean I'm perfect at all these things. What it forced me to do was seek help. And that began this new journey of spiritual awareness as well as business awareness, because I ended up meeting other people, not only in the Al-Anon space. I started searching for other opportunities to grow. In fact, I did an anger management course. You could imagine that I was quite angry when all of this was happening, angry with my my wife and angry with my ex-best friend. So true story. I go to this anger management course and I'm the only person who's volunteered to be there. Everyone else that's in the course is there by the court of law. They're forced to be there.
Yeah.
So they're going around telling me, you know, they're all telling their story in terms of why they're there. And they're begrudgingly telling the story that, you know, and it's like some of them are like, you know, something to the effect of, I hit my old lady when she crushed my pack of cigarettes. And then my story comes along and it's like, well, I'm voluntarily here. And it's because my wife and my best friend had an affair and she's now pregnant with his kid. And they're like, and you're not in jail? Right. So those that pay attention. I chose to be there. They were forced to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think's back in jail on a regular basis? Not me. I'd never been to jail. Not to say that there's anything wrong with that. Hopefully people learn from it. So it was an interesting experience. Being in that room, I found it very challenging because there was nobody in that room that I wanted to be with. Being in other rooms where people were paying to be there, those are the people that, and it had nothing to do with the money. It had everything to do with the commitment. Some people couldn't even afford to be in some of these rooms. And they invested in it because of their commitment to want to be better. It's awesome.
Yeah. So that's really speaking to You know, the power of a why.
Yeah.
Or a reason.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I work with a lot of people in the fitness industry, as you know, over the last decade or more, actually, of my life. And that is, that's one of the keys to their success is having a powerful why. So you can commit to taking the actions that you need to take to get to where you want to go.
Yeah. And then to publicly put it out there, to let people know this is what is my why, which is an internal thing. And then to be able to say, now this is the goal, right? It's the dream with a deadline. It's here's the goal. And this is what I want to accomplish because of the why that I have. And to let people know what it is. Now, all of a sudden, it's like when you're surrounded by these other people in this context, because you said it earlier, what's the secret sauce? It's the accountability. It's like, okay, Joe, you want to do this? All right. Then what are the steps to be able to get there? Did you accomplish this? Did you get your list done? So I have an accountability list that I am accountable for, and it's my mindset coach. So I have different coaches. I'm a former Mr. Natural Canada, and I have a fitness coach. I know how to set up an exercise plan, a nutrition plan. I've got somebody who's putting it together for me. Number one, so it releases brain fatigue and decision fatigue. Number two, and the most important thing is I don't want to let Ryland, my fitness coach, down. I don't want to let him down. I love the guy and it's great. I'm very grateful to have him in my life and I pay him. Rusty Osborne, my mindset coach, same thing. It's like I've got a list that I have to send to him 5 days a week. And if I don't get the list done, then I actually have to donate money to a political party that I don't like.
Ooh, that's tough.
Right? So there's an accountability.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. Dang it. So sometimes it's like, he'll message me and it's like, did you get your list done? And it's like, oh, right? Something might come up. Or it'll be like, hey, Rusty, the list is done early today. So yeah, crazy.
Right.
It works. It works. And then of course there's Craig. So like there's some people go, well, how can you afford all these coaches? How can you afford not to? It's like, where do you want to be?
Right.
If you're ever looking for a coach, the question that you want to ask your coach is, who's your coach? And if they answer you, I don't have one, I would then go, okay, that's information for me to make a decision as to whether or not I want to have you as a coach. Because if a coach that you're meeting with doesn't have a coach of some kind, that's valuable information.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that individual doesn't have some sort of process to continue to better themselves, to continue to work on themselves. Do they really have the credentials to teach you what you want to know to be able to continue to improve?
It's like, Ian, if you hear somebody say, do as I say, not as I do.
Right.
That's again. Yeah. I simply say that's information for you, because in other words, because it's not my job to tell people what to do. It's my job as a sales professional. I'm a big believer in calling it instead of a sales conversation, it's a buying conversation. So here's the information, and then now you have the right to choose. So this is information for you. And now you can choose. Do you want to buy or not? That's right. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And that word choice is such a powerful thing. And when you relate that back to the decisions that we make in our lives, in terms of, are we going to choose to be positive? Are we going to choose to be negative? Are we going to choose to put the work in where we don't necessarily want to be able to achieve what our goals are? Are we going to choose to not?
Yeah.
And that word, that choice is such a powerful thing. And I'm curious, what were some of the hard choices that you had to make in terms of your own success?
Yep. So giving up certain addictions that I still battle with some of them. I have an addiction to this stupid device. It's like this and I'm picking up a phone, right? So my mobile phone, I have a total addiction to it. And so it's amazing how I can go on social media with the intention to create, and then I get caught in consuming.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a variety of ways to, right, put the phone away. Like the phone is deadly. Video is deadly. Netflix is deadly. So in my 20s, I would stay up super late and watch late night television. And it's to me today, what's the entertainment value? It's like, I'd rather say, hey, you know what, Shauna, let's watch an episode of this. We watch an episode and we know at the end of every Netflix episode, there's a freaking cliffhanger, and she'll look at me and Shauna, if you're watching this, I'm calling you out. She'll look at me and go, oh, we got to watch the next one. And I know.
Right.
Going to bed.
Right.
And so, because they're designed this way.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
They're so I fully addicted to TV watching. I love stories. I love movies. I love this stuff. And so what I'll do is I'll say, okay, I got to read. I'll read before bed. And even if a book is a page turner, I end up like, I got to fall asleep. So it's great. What's wrong with not having a book and just talking to my wife in bed, which could, you know, lead to better numbers on our weekly Sunday, how's our sex life?
True story. Yeah,
right. So
absolutely.
Right. It's all good. TV was something I had to give up. I've made a point of my rule is, again, I haven't cut out alcohol 100%. I'm not going to judge anyone whether they drink it daily. I know people that have a glass of wine a day or half a bottle a day. I know some people that drink multiple bottles a day. That's their world. My rule is I do not drink on school nights. That's just a rule. So I've chosen, I love how Wayne Dyer said it. I've chosen to become a camel essentially 6 days a week. And therefore I don't drink for 5 or 6 days a week. And even when I do drink, I don't go to the place or places that I did when I was younger. It's just, yeah. And the thing is that the other piece of it too is even my what other addiction I love sweet foods. And I mean, I love looking fit. So the choices that we make, right? It's not to say that I don't have sweets once in a while. I still do. I have a collection of M&M dispensers in my home office. I make a point of not filling them up like I used to, because if they were full, then I would always empty them. So these choices that we make, it's like never go. I rarely do the shopping ever now. And you know, we do usually do click and collect, or we get it delivered. But again, all about saving time. It's knowing, don't start doing a list when you're hungry. Because trust me, if I went out, the shopping cart would be full of garbage. Because I love
absolutely.
This stuff. I remember, I remember Bedros talking about the crumble cookie, right? I'm the same way. You put a 2.2 kilo bag of M&Ms in front of me, game over. There was a time, it's hard to believe it, Ian. I'm currently, I haven't weighed myself in a week because I've been at the lake. Last time I weighed myself, I was 175 at 13, 14% body fat. So I feel really good. It's my fighting weight. I'm not like shredded. I'm in good shape. I was once 206 at 5'8". That's like looking like the Michelin man. It's very doughy, no, right? And it's all due to baked goods, alcohol, sugars. Late night TV, YouTube shorts. I still get caught up. I gave up TikTok completely. Like I deleted it from my phone. And the other thing that I gave up was gossip. That was a big one. If somebody starts talking negatively about somebody, and even with my own parents, I brought them out to the cabin a couple of weeks ago, and we were driving out. It's two and a half hour drive. and they were talking about a family member, and it was for 2.5 hour drive. For half of the drive, I without them realizing it, I started asking questions that changed the subject. I literally SOS'd the situation. Because right. It was like, this is over an hour of nothing, but my energy was getting drained. And I was like, I can't do this for another 90 minutes. I'm going to lose it. So,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. And I also gave up sitting on sales calls. I don't know if you know, I did this and I realized, oh yeah, I'm standing up. I should say this to Ian. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer that if I'm going to do a podcast or if I'm going to be on a sales call or if I'm going to be in a meeting, I will typically be standing. I'm doing a quarterly meeting tomorrow with the team. And it's a 3-hour meeting. So I will likely be standing and sitting and I'll adjust accordingly. So, yeah.
Standing keeps that energy going.
It's important. Right? Yeah, I think it's critical. And the one thing I'm going to I'll finish with this, and because I know you got a lot of other questions and I don't want to monopolize. When you don't choose, you still make a choice. It's a song. It's a line of a song from Rush that you know, when you still do not choose, you still have made a choice. And so if somebody abstains from making a choice, you've chosen to abstain. So we're always, that is the free will, that whether you believe in God or the universe or source, I believe that you and I we're here for a reason. And we, again, I mean, I do believe in God and a higher power and source. It's all the same. And you, like Ian, you're a sorcerer. And I'm not talking about that of like a witches and incantations. I'm talking that you know mm-hmm. how to derive from the source energy. So you derive from the source. And I've got goosebumps saying this, right? When you surround yourself on purpose with other people that have great energy and that are persistent, and it, you know what, it's like, yeah, you know what, I'm gonna have some missteps along the way, or I might fail along the way. I know people that have been bankrupt multiple times, and then they didn't bother them. Okay, so I went bankrupt. Next, it scares the shit out of me, and they went for it, and they're now hugely successful. Because they had a dream, man, and they surrounded by themselves, right. And they were able to draw on it. So they've chosen to get there. Yeah,
choice is huge. I want to ask you about a quote that you said, and if you can kind of unpack it for us and tell us what it means to you.
Okay,
you said that when you improve your skill level and improve your skill set, it changes your mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And when your skill set and mindset change, so does your heart set.
Your heart set. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you unpack that for us?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
You know, a lot of people, there's the three C's of what I call the sales samurai. And a samurai, when you consider the culture of honor, integrity, and respect, they don't pull out the sword unless they absolutely have to as a samurai. And so under that same context, you could have somebody with their hearts in the right place and their mind is in the right place. They just don't have the skills. You can have somebody who has great, great skills, and yet they don't apply them correctly because they don't have control. Because the three C's that I like to talk about in the SOS Dojo are having confidence, like speaking confidently so that people believe you. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned conviction and you went to your heart, having that mm-hmm. level of conviction so that people resonate and they align and they believe in you. And then the third C is control. Knowing how to be the warrior in the garden instead of being the gardener in the war. And the warrior in the garden understands that, yep, I can go in and I can be incredibly dangerous and I can decimate everyone, and I'm choosing not to. And so when you develop the skills, including learning and practicing skills that you would never use in the world of sales or persuasion. And this is where there's a sense of feeling, and feeling's important. If you feel that this is not an alignment, and if persuasion suddenly feels like manipulation, And my suggestion is, if you don't want to manipulate people and you don't want to be manipulative, or God forbid, you don't want to be pushy, learn the skill. Don't use it. Don't be angry that their skill exists. You're better off knowing the skill and not using it than not knowing it at all. That's my approach. And again, I like to tell people, take my information like spare ribs. You keep the meat and throw away the bone. And so when you develop skills with practice, even if you never use them live in the real gameplay situation, you learn the skills. It, with time and repetition, will have an effect on how you think. And what will happen in terms of this is what would be a passive approach becomes an assertive approach. It doesn't have to be aggressive. It becomes assertive. And when that happens and you start to see results, then results begets more results, which means now you have this level of conviction, this your heart set, because now I see it working. So you double down on your skills and your headspace changes and your heart set. So Robin Sharma, I don't know if you know who Robin Sharma is, great writer and coach, would say that he goes into four sets, actually. He goes, you want to have skill set, mindset, heart set, and soul set.
Okay.
And so I like the trifecta, where heart set, soul set kind of meets in the same place. However, sure. I respect Robin a lot. And yeah. So.
That's awesome. Clearly, you have used all of your life experience and learning and coaching throughout the years to create the SOS Dojo. And for our listeners and viewers who don't know what that is, can you describe what's the SOS Dojo and why the dojo?
Yeah. So the SOS stands for Sales Objection System. A systematic approach of two steps of acknowledge and ask a question. What do people crave? They crave to be heard. So when somebody understands and gets a real grasp of communication, then it's a question of, what am I doing to properly listen to someone, have them feel heard, and how best can I understand them? I'm looking to be someone who understands as opposed to be understood. I'm looking to be the best version of myself. And the ego would have been, hey, I want people to find me interesting. Now, more than ever, I'm so interested in other people at all levels, right? Wherever they are on their journey, I'm interested in that. Can I help these people? And if there's people that are way, whatever that success ladder looks like, is there a way I can help them? Not with the intention of what's in it for me, because a lot of people listen to that radio station, WIIFM, right? What's in it for me? The goal here, if I keep giving, the seed is planted, eventually things will happen. There's, whether you believe in karma or not, the what goes around comes around, so be it. There's something in that. And there's also something just that just feels good to give. So the SOS is the culmination of this. As Tom Peters said, simplicity is elegance. It's this elegant two-step system that I learned. And what I found was that it was a skill that most people who either hated sales or they were in sales, and it was the biggest stumbling block. So even though the dojo has this concept of the buying conversation roadmap, the specific skill set of overcoming or handling objections was something that kept coming back. And within my program that I had written years ago called the Army of One Sales Training Program, it was the piece that people loved the most. They felt that this is the most valuable. And it was something that I enjoyed doing as far as coaching back and forth. The dojo came in because I was teaching SOS. I've been teaching it for close to 25 years, actually over 25 years now. The dojo became a thing because I have an affinity towards that Asian culture. That affinity towards martial arts. I used to take Taekwondo, Kung Fu. And what I learned was there's an ascension model. And if you really want to master something, everyone who ever becomes a master was once a student. And when you want to master something, you get to a place where you teach it. And here's the funny thing. And I learned this from T. Harv Eker. So you notice that I'm quoting a lot of people because I've learned from a lot of masters. And mm-hmm. I continue to learn from other masters, and I'm seeking other masters. And in my road to mastery, T. Harv Eker had said, every master was once a disaster. And it's so true. Nobody's perfect. Tony Robbins isn't perfect. He's just been at it for so long. And he's not perfect now. He's been at it for 40 plus years. So if yeah. you've given yourself that amount of persistence, where do you think you're going to be? People give up way too soon, and they give up for the wrong reasons. So the dojo became a thing right. because it was like, thanks to the pandemic, instead of me traveling, I was on the road between 150 and 160 days a year. Now I can do this live on Zoom in small groups, very intimate, where people can get the practice. So instead of having a one and done, Joe comes in, does a speech, and people get a little bit of a rise out of their sales to inevitably fall back into the bad habits, I can obviously I still go and speak. What ends up happening, though, is that now with the option of the dojo, people can then go, hey, I want to come in and get some training done. And I've got a team of people that have learned from me that they themselves have earned their black belt because there's an ascension model. So now they teach it to others. And so now I'm able to expand my why, the reason I'm here, to be able to help other people create buying conversations as opposed to pushy sales in the things that they believe in.
And it's wildly successful.
It's growing, and it's yes, okay. It's wildly successful. I'm very proud.
There's the modest response. Yeah,
and I can't wait to see where it's going to go. I have a quarterly meeting, and we're going to discuss my goal now. I'm going to put it out there. I will publicly tell you, I want to see 1 million black belt. Like, this is a crazy number. It's just like, what? I want to see a million black belts on this planet. If we had a million black belts, we could change the world. Literally, it would change the world in terms of way people perceive. When we hear the word sales, I believe it's a noble pursuit. People think sales is slimy. It's disgusting. It's used car sales, plaid shirts, polyester pants of 1980s, pushy, pushy, pushy. I disagree. There's a nobility and integrity that comes from this, especially when your heart's in the right place. When you have skill set, mindset, heart set, and you're out to help people, mm-hmm. no is a great answer from a guest, as opposed to looking at people as a number. It's they're guests. How do we help them? And I believe the consumer is also smart enough to smell a bad rat when they're just in it for money. Doesn't mean that you can't make a lot of money doing this. You absolutely can. It's a skill set that requires having integrity. And we don't let everybody into the dojo. There are some people where it's like they're not ready yet.
You know, for me, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you are the sensei and the master, the samurai. When we're talking about the things that you teach, in my mind, it really boils down to what you're teaching is emotional and intellectual communication.
Indeed.
Like, how to be able to communicate with somebody by giving them respect, by listening to them and hearing what they have to say, and then figuring out what's the best way that you can help them achieve what they want to achieve.
Yep.
And for me, it goes beyond, you know, utilizing those skills in my business. It goes into real life applications with family, with friends, with loved ones, and knowing how to communicate with them in a respectful way so you can both be able to get your points across, so you're not butting heads, or just being able to get along better by using the principles that you teach. It's just it's a great way to really understand people. And be able to communicate with all kinds of people.
The big push that's been happening over the last couple of years, as you well know, Ian, is it's all about artificial intelligence. Use ChatGPT. It's AI. You're going to be able to have people buy from you automatically. Go to Amazon, click and purchase. the real winners in this long term is not AI, it's HI. Artificial intelligence is here to stay. Human interaction is a necessity. And this is, if I go back in terms of the stuff that I talked about earlier, like there's no artificial intelligence that's going to be able to coach a human. This is not going to happen. No matter how good AI gets, human interaction is something that I'm looking at. There's an intangible to it that is required as how we are designed. It's part of the DNA. It's part of the species. And because of this, emotional management, the practice of this, because we all have goals. And so when somebody hears an objection, guards get up. And we want to help people so bad that when they say, you know what, I want to think about it. And it's like the initial reaction, think about it. Dude, what? You got nothing to think about. You got to do this now. And then all of a sudden you're coming across pushy. And so what ends up happening is we end up misinterpreting our intelligent approach because our emotions are high. And when emotions go up, intelligence goes down. So the practice of these things live allow us to be prepared. You know, the saying, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Well, I just recently wrote a Daily Cup of Joe, which is my daily email, about Steph Curry. He's done something to the effect of over 2.5 million 3-point shots in practice, in private, to be able to do under four, it's three, I can't remember the exact number, it was 3,786 game-played 3-point shots in his career thus far. And he's the number one 3-point shooter. So what does it prove to you? He's practiced 2.5 million times in private to be rewarded with 3,786. 2.5 million. It's taken him over 15 years. Or it's 500 3-point shots a day for the span of his... It's crazy numbers. And yet, that kind of commitment to the practice and therefore, you know, coming right back to the name of your show, it's that persistence to be able to be rewarded in public for what he's done in private. Like, nobody rewards me for getting up at 5:30 every day. The reward is there because of the fact that I do it every day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I am right there with you. I have a morning practice that I do every morning, and you know, and you're right. No one's patting me on the back for getting up at, you know, early in the morning and getting workout in and starting my day. Yeah. But the reward comes in that, you know, my mind is right after I'm done with my morning routine. So then I can then step into my day being the best version of myself at that time.
Love it. Yeah.
You know, for me, that's the reward. And yet, you know, no one's ever going to see that because no one's waking up at that time in the morning because everybody's still sleeping, especially in my house.
And you're in a master.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you because you're in the Fit Body Bootcamp Elite Mastermind. You choose to be there. You pay to be there. And you're around a whole bunch of other, you know, and it's not all of the Fit Body Bootcamp people that are in there. There's franchise partners that choose not to. And isn't it interesting that all of the best Fit Body Bootcamp franchise partners, as far as revenue and impact, are all part of the Mastermind group? There's no surprise. Like, so what limits people? It's their choice to not step in or step up and have accountability from others that want to raise their game as well. It's no surprise.
What would you say to those who, because I think one of the biggest obstacles or hurdles to making a big choice sometimes is fear. Yep. And I would imagine you being human, you've had some of those situations where you've had to make a choice that really moved the needle, whether it be in your business or in your life.
Yeah.
And fear tapped you on the shoulder and say, hey, Joe, what are we going to do?
Stay in the comfort zone.
What were some of the tools that you used to get past that fear?
Yes, I love that question. That is a great question. I just recently went through this. June and July were really tough months for us. It's bizarre. As the business is growing, I have to make decisions. And Elon Musk recently said that I saw, again, the addiction to the videos, right? I saw a video of Elon Musk saying being a leader, or because you lead it, you know, you have a company. Being a leader in a company is like staring into an abyss while eating glass. And it's like,
wow,
that's heavy. Because you do have successes, and everybody on the outside sees all these successes and they think everything's, again, all beautiful. Hey, we're solving problems all the time. And as you grow, there's just more problems.
More problems.
So that's all it is. There's never, everything's perfect. It's never perfect. There's just more problems getting thrown at me. And so going through a growth phase, I hired a whole bunch of experts and people that were the right fit. And then it's like, okay. And then we ended up having, due to summer, due to the lean on the fitness industry at a certain level, we had some attrition because the fitness industry tends to slow down. And I refused to freak out. Like, I mean, part of me was, I'm freaking out. And part of me was like, I'm not going to freak out about this. And then I doubled down on investments within the company and planted more seeds because I knew, and this is the practice of unshakable faith. It's a practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just knew that, okay, I'm having to go into my line of credit now to make sure everybody gets paid.
Right.
And I said, I know I'm going to get through this. This is a test. I truly believe these things happen. And there's the practice of leaning into tough conversations. That includes members of my family. That includes members of my team. And having a tough conversation doesn't mean that I go to the conversation where I get to blow up at someone. It's, I need to understand where they're coming from and then voice concerns so that we're also in alignment. And again, I'm learning this as a father, I'm learning this as a husband, I'm learning this as a CEO. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I bounce stuff off other people within my circle. It's like, I have a friend of mine. She's a leadership coach. And we actually have a call. She asks me for sales advice. I ask her for leadership advice. So we meet every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock Central, 8 o'clock for her time Pacific. Her name is Ann Laguza. She's wonderful. In fact, she's actually been on Bryce Henson's podcast as well.
And nice.
So Ann and I will meet every couple of weeks and we shoot the breeze over a cup of coffee and we go over some things. And I've had conversations where, like, you know, Jeff, listen, Jeff and I, what I love about Jeff is he's not a yes man. What I get frustrated about Jeff is that he's not a yes man. So I've got to be able to lean into tough conversation with Jeff. Jeff is a sales samurai in his own right. He's a sales sensei. He's a developer of the AIM program within the SOS Dojo. I love the guy to bits, and I need to have conversations that I got to lean into. And I want to make sure that everybody on our team is taken care of. And I also got to make sure that I'm taken care of so that my family's taken care of. So the practice of leaning into the tough conversations and the practice of faith in the face of adversity, there's this idea that if you don't lean into this, there's no growth. It's easy to go, yeah, you know what? That bed looks really comfortable. I'm just going to crawl back in. You can. Right. And it's warm in there.
Yep.
You're not going to get any of this. You're not going to get any growth. There's no way. Yep. Yeah, the Austin Nestle wrote a book called From 6 to 7 Figures, and I ended up getting his t-shirt and I wear it with pride. I don't know Austin personally. I read his book. What I love about it is that it's a choice. And those of us that have lost weight or what I like to say is release weight, or for those of us that have built muscle, it's not easy. You got to put in the work. And so when the business is like, the trend of the business has been this, right? Goes up and then there's a dip and then it goes up. So, I mean, the line isn't perfectly straight, you know, 45 degree angle. It's roller coaster ride, and the downs suck. I don't deny it. And do I feel fear? Yeah. Hell yes, I feel fear. And I don't just feel fear and do it anyways. I feel fear. And then I go, okay, what is this here to teach me? I sit in the fear. What I used to do when I was really, really young, in my early 20s, feel the fear, have a drink, mood alter, alter my mood.
Yeah.
Right? Feel the fear, mm-hmm. watch TV. Feel the fear, have something to eat. Feel the fear, work out. No, now feel the fear. What's this here to teach me? Sit in it. Breathe. And just think. Practice. And it doesn't mean that I don't feel those fears. Of course I do. Having faith beyond that fear. And then and then going into gratitude, not just jumping into gratitude right away, because it's easy that I feel fear. Oh, I'm grateful for, and then change my mood because it's still mood altering. Feel the fear, sit in it, and then go, what's this here to teach me? And then take action, because action will beat anxiety, period.
Every time.
And then I've recently read in a spiritual text that whenever you're feeling fear, what can you do to share? What can you do to be of service? The moment you start being of service to others, fear goes away. So what can I do to share? And that's a hard practice. That's a hard practice. It's like Sean and I will be driving and somebody will cut me off. And I catch myself like mid-sentence, you know, ready to flip the bird at somebody.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm like, ooh, yeah. I got to swallow that. And that's an opportunity to grow. It's hard work and it's practice, and I'm not perfect at it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Man, Joe, you have dropped so many life nuggets in this conversation, but I want to make sure that our listeners and our viewers know that, you know, the things that Joe is talking about, he wraps up into these trainings for SOS Dojo. And they, again, are, for me, aren't just useful for sales on the job, but useful in life and in conversations and relationships with people, which is what it's really all about.
You know,
so, Joe, can you tell our listeners and viewers that they are interested to learn more about Joe Marcoux or the SOS Dojo, where they can go to find you?
You bet. So you could find me on Instagram. You can go at SOS Dojo, SOSDOJO. You could also go to SOSDOJO.com. And what I'm going to do, you could also see me on LinkedIn as well. Look up at Joe Marcoux. What I'll also do for you, Ian, is I'll give you a link. If anybody's curious, they want to be able to get access to, and I'll make sure that we create a link with your name on it, Ian, so that we know where people are coming from. I'm going to give them my book. It's How to Handle the 26 Toughest Objections in Sales. It's literally the ultimate guide of overcoming any objection. It's a step-by-step guide. It's the words to use in those situations. And if you want to check out the book, Ian will be able to drop a link, and you guys, I'll make sure that my assistant puts that link together, because I have no clue how to do that. I get other people to do those things, and I'll get you. That's my gift to you and my gift to your listeners and viewers.
Thank you.
It's an honor. Much. Thank you, my friend. Keep doing the good work.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It has been a pleasure speaking with you. The honor is really all mine. Just an amazing individual all around. For those of you who, obviously most people listening and watching this, haven't had the opportunity to meet you, but I mean, Joe is just a salt of the earth guy. Like,
thanks, man.
You know, he'll hug you, you
for
know,
six
he'll talk
seconds.
To you
for six
for
seconds.
6 seconds. That is key. That is key. And then the next time you see him, he's going to remember you and remember some of the things that you talked about, right? So he's just an amazing individual. I highly recommend you guys go follow him and check him out. But Joe, again, thank you so much for your time. I know that you're up the lake, so I want to let you go so you can get back to doing your thing.
I got another call. 10 minutes. It's all good.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. And I want to thank all of our listeners and viewers for tuning in to this episode and checking it out. And if you guys are watching this on YouTube and you like what you saw, please like and subscribe so you can get more information about positive persistence. And that's what this is all about. And I want to remind you that it is key and essential that if you want to achieve your goals, you need to be positive, you need to be persistent, but of the utmost importance, remember, mindset is everything. We'll see you next time.